Last week, Republican Congressman Reed Ribble from Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District held a phosphorus summit to address the growing concern of dead zones forming in Lake Michigan's Green Bay. What's a dead zone? What causes them? And what fixes them? We'll discuss the problem and possible solutions this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, April 6th. Plus, a little bit later this hour, how big of a concern is this proposed cut in recycling funds for local governments in the proposed state budget? We'll talk about that as well. With our guest, who is a political scientist and a public and environmental affairs analyst at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. And we'll welcome your questions and views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Michael Kraft, a professor emeritus of political science and public and environmental affairs at UW Green Bay. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what is a dead zone?
Dead zone comes about because of excessive nutrients entering the water, which causes algae to grow, and then eventually the algae sinks down and decomposes. That uses up oxygen in the water, and we call it a dead zone because fish cannot survive, pretty much nothing can survive in an oxygen-depleted water body, and hence we call it a dead zone.
Yeah, so what is a nutrient that's causing
nutrient. The big concern is phosphorus, and nitrogen plays a role as well. So under the Federal Clean Water Act and state actions, we have tried to control a great variety of pollutants, but mostly from what we call point sources. The two most important would be industry and municipal discharge, that is sewage treatment plants. But the biggest problem leading to dead zones and other non-point source pollution problems is agriculture. For example, by one recent account in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, agriculture contributes about 46% of the phosphorus load, and industrial discharge is about 21%, and municipal treatment plants about 16. So the biggest part of the problem is essentially the way we use land and farmers. And in Wisconsin, we're talking about dairy farmers and very large dairy farms where the manure and fertilizer treatments and other agricultural applications find their way into the Bay of Green Bay and Lake Michigan. That is, fertilizers enter the streams and eventually find their way into the bay. And so we've had at the university here, we've had graduate students and others working on trying to measure the dead zone. We've got pretty good records on how it has changed over the years. It's really, we're not talking about a couple of block area. We're talking about, by the figure I'm looking at, the majority of the Bay of Green Bay, and extending from just north of Green Bay all the way to Door County and Sturgeon Bay. So it's quite a large area. It's getting larger every year, and hence the summit. And trying to get some information about what more we need to do to control phosphorus.
Yeah, the headline in the newspaper says, this year Green Bay is projected to have the longest dead zone in its history. I mean, it said in 2014 the dead zone lasted 43 days. Now this is going to be even longer than that?
Well, that's the projection, and some listeners may recall we have other dead zones around the country, particularly where the Mississippi River drains into the Gulf of Mexico, and the concern there and elsewhere around the world is that the runoff that winds up in rivers and rivers flowing into oceans and bays creates an area that's not habitable for fish and other kinds of plant life. So it's not a good thing, and the concern, of course, is what do we do about it and how much is it going to cost and who bears the burden? It's like any other environmental problem. Ultimately, I think it comes down to can we regulate, can we find some other way to persuade particularly large dairy herds and other dairy farmers to do more to control runoff. And there are solutions for that. It's just they're not free.
Yeah, and we'll get into some of those possible solutions, but just trying to get an idea of the scope of this problem in that the dead zones are growing longer because of increased runoff from especially the very large dairy farms?
Right. That's the assumption, is that over time, with economic expansion and growing dairy herds, that is talking about some very large, sorry.
Well, let me let you get a quick drink of water while I remind listeners that we are talking about dead zones in the Bay of Green Bay. The problem led Congressman Reed Ribble to hold a phosphorus summit last week to address the problem, to highlight the problem, and to review some possible solutions. Yeah. I wanted to get to how harmful are these to the health of the Bay of Green Bay?
Well, they're harmful because nothing can grow in the so-called dead zones, and so we're talking about in terms of the increase in dairy herds, projections that these dead zones will be larger and will last longer, and that means fishing is going to cease to exist in those areas, and so it's not good for those who either commercial fishermen or recreational fisher persons, and not good for those who live along the shoreline, because eventually you can get, particularly in the heat of the summer, with water levels mixing up, you can get massive fish kills, and that means you have fish washing up on shore. It's not a pleasant experience. Or you have algae blooms that in turn decay on the shore and cause problems.
Yeah, are these the toxic algae blooms that we hear about?
Well, they're not all toxic, but it has the same effect. And you've probably heard about this in Lake Erie, where there was a large toxic algae bloom. So the causes are the same all over. It has to do with pumping too much nutrients, particularly phosphorus, into water bodies and causing the algae to bloom, which in turn deprives the water of oxygen. So it's not a good thing to happen. It doesn't directly affect people's health, but it does make a difference in terms of aquatic life, and it certainly makes a difference in terms of recreational pursuits.
Yeah.
And as we were talking about, the cause really is, yes, we have larger dairy farms and we have more cattle in general in the state. The numbers I have, for example, show that Kewaunee County was up 34% between 1983 and 2012, and Brown County, that is Metro Green Bay, about 20% increase. And some of these dairy farms are very large, 5,000 cows. So they're big operations. It's difficult and costly to control phosphorus, and that's essentially what is causing the problem. So that's why Reed Ribble held the summit and heard from a variety of people, and presumably there will be some additional summits or hearings on the issue, looking for solutions.
Yeah. Well, what is a possible solution if this is a runoff of manure and fertilizer and such? How do you contain that?
Well, you try to restrict the runoff, and there are ways of doing that. That is, we're talking about, I guess you'd call it manure management on the farms. We're talking about building barriers that keep nutrients from flowing into water bodies. We're talking about whenever we speak of non-point solution, the challenge is it's one thing to regulate a particular industrial discharge because companies or a sewage plant can control what they put into the water. But when it's runoff from urban areas and runoff from agriculture, it really means thousands of different farmers are responsible for the problem, and it's very hard to regulate so many different sources of the pollution. So generally we talk about non-regulatory approaches such as education, maybe some financial incentives for farmers to better manage the dairy herds and better manage the land. And that's where I think the concern will be focused. Mm-hmm. Some call for increased regulation, but it'd be very difficult to regulate so many different farming operations.
Yeah. Well, is this a state problem or a federal problem? Why is a
well, it's both. You know, the Clean Water Act is one of those major federal environmental laws that is for which responsibility is shared with state governments, and so this will be both federal and state. And I think that's why Reed Ribble called the summit as a member of Congress too. But the Clean Water Act basically does not do very much about non-point source pollution. That is left up to the states. And we have an additional problem, which is there are some budget cuts in the governor's proposal this year for the two-year budget. Some additional cuts that about $5.7 million are the figures I have from the Journal Sentinel. That's from runoff pollution remedies that would be affected by additional budget cuts for, because of the state's fiscal situation. So in a way, we will be doing even less than we have done before, even as the problem is growing.
Yeah. We have just a minute before a news break, and then we'll talk more after the news break. But do you feel anything valuable came from the phosphorus summit?
Well, anytime you hold a summit or a gathering of people and it gets press attention about a problem that needs solutions, I think it's a good idea. I think there was some criticism that the attendance was fairly small. The press reported about 150 people. Mostly it was dairy farmers and some local government officials. Others said that we didn't hear as much from environmental scientists. Phosphorus is a very well-studied issue. Mm-hmm. I think the congressman really needs to talk to environmental scientists in the UW system, particularly the Green Bay campus, where we know a lot about this problem.
We'll talk more about this problem and possible solutions after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Michael Kraft, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the problem of dead zones in Lake Michigan's Green Bay. We're discussing how the phosphorus that comes from farm runoff and other sources is expected to create the longest lasting dead zone, a dead zone being an algae-clogged, oxygen-deprived area where nothing can live, in the Bay of Green Bay this summer. We're talking about what needs to happen to clean up this problem. And we're welcoming any questions and reactions you might have, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Michael Kraft is our guest, a professor emeritus of political science and public and environmental affairs at UW Green Bay. Matt in Oshkosh is with us. Hello, Matt.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to make the point. What I've been told and taught is that phosphorus binds itself to the soil, so that the only way that phosphorus can get into the water is if the soil gets into the water. And I totally disagree with this pointing fingers at the large dairies as the villain here, because nobody has ever come out by our farm from the university and put in a monitoring station on our drainage ditches that go right through our farm. There's been absolutely no work done like that to identify and prove that phosphorus is getting into the water off of our particular farm. But then you guys all sit here and blame the farmers. I think the bigger villain here is places like the deep tunnel system in Milwaukee, where millions of gallons of untreated sewage go directly into Lake Michigan, and other water treatment, sewage treatment plants that have discharges and untreated sewage that goes directly in. And another problem is the over-fertilization of lawns in the cities and towns, villages in Wisconsin.
Hold on, man. Let's talk about these issues, and we'll give you a follow-up, too. You mentioned percentages.
Right.
Where did those figures come from, Professor Kraft?
Those were what was reported last week in the journal Sentinel, and based on assessments throughout the state by the DNR and others. And the numbers I have show that agriculture, and this doesn't mean every farmer. Again, it may be some farms release very little, and as Matt indicates, it could depend on the lay of the land and the soil, but clearly agriculture here and around the country is the dominant factor, most because the other sources have been regulated and largely controlled. So the numbers I have are agriculture is about 46% of the phosphorus runoff, industrial discharge is about 21%, municipalities about 16%. Now, industry and municipalities are heavily regulated. Urban runoff is not so regulated, and that's a small part. There are other sources as well, but the around the country and here in Wisconsin, the biggest uncontrolled source of most water pollution, according to the U.S. EPA, is, in fact, agriculture, and that's because it is not regulated. except for the very largest dairy farms, and it's difficult to regulate. So many people would say we don't need necessarily to regulate every farming operation. What we need is to encourage better use, better management of the land, better management of the manure, and many farmers, and Matt may be one of them, are doing that. Mm-hmm. That's not to say every farmer is responsible.
Yeah.
And for the whatever problems Milwaukee has, I don't think we can say that's the cause of the dead zone in the Bay of Green Bay. It does not discharge directly into that bay.
Right. And as for fertilizer on lawns, there was a state law passed
correct.
That would regulate that.
Right. We do regulate phosphorus. So the legislature did pull back from some of the statewide controls, but I think what people will find as they fertilize lawns this spring and summer is that the products they're using probably contain far less phosphorus than they used to, and absolutely correct that runoff from lawns into local water bodies would be a contributing factor. It's just not as, according to the percentages I'm looking at, it's not as big a contribution as the very large dairy operations.
Yeah. So, Matt?
Yes, you cited the U.S. EPA figures. I would like you to tell me, where in the state of Wisconsin does the United States Environmental Protection Agency have monitoring systems monitoring the amount of phosphorus going into our water?
The EPA is not doing the monitoring. Where local monitoring takes place is largely by local land agencies. I know around the Green Bay, we have a cooperation between the university and local high school science students who regularly monitor dozens and dozens of water bodies, and that is one indication we have. As I indicated, I'm not an environmental scientist. I'm trying to summarize what the scientists have found, and this is a longstanding problem: a phosphorus runoff from agriculture and from urban sources. And all the information we have points to agriculture as the remaining major source. That's not to say, again, that every farming operation is leaking large quantities of phosphorus into local water bodies. The EPA and the state are responsible for maintaining water quality and have focused over the last 40 years largely on point sources. So I think what we're seeing is now is a time we need to focus a little bit more on non-point sources.
Yeah. So what more could the state do or the DNR do to address this issue?
Well, I think the state could certainly provide some education to farmers on best manure practices, land use practices. I don't think too many people want, except for the largest dairy operations, I don't think they're calling for more regulation. They are calling for farmers working with land conservation staff. And here's where we get another problem, which is the budget that's currently before the state legislature for the next 2 years actually reduces funding for dealing with a non-point pollution. So according to the Journal Sentinel, the budget cuts about $5.7 million from runoff pollution remedies, and that is something for the state legislature to consider. Namely, is this the direction in which they want to go?
Thank you, Matt, for the call. We have other callers. Rick in Pulaski is with us. Hello, Rick.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I also happen to be a farmer, and I'm an advocate for managed grazing as a viable solution to this problem. I think that the problem of phosphorus in our water is a function of the failure of the marketplace. Phosphorus reserves around the world are diminishing, and it's almost way beyond peak phosphorus right now, where the price of phosphorus is going to go up for the farmers that are buying it, and yet we're wasting it by allowing it to get into our waterways. It's a taking of public's access to recreational water, the use of water, and I think there are some viable solutions. I think that the marketplace has been manipulated by our government. Both the Doyle and the Walker administration have given tax breaks and subsidies to the expansion of agriculture. Managed grazing is a viable solution. It's been proven that it maintains a sod all year round. It's economically beneficial for farmers. It's the agribusiness community is not accepting it because it sort of restricts the growth of agriculture, but we can multiply the number of farmers in this country, in the state, and actually maintain and improve the water quality. So by managed grazing, we're talking about permanent sod, moving the cattle around, and maintaining the phosphorus on the land because it's a waste to let it run away.
What do you know about managed grazing, Professor Kraft?
Well, not too much, but I think Rick is indicating exactly what needs to be done. Phosphorus is a valuable material, and properly managed, it can be a resource that can be used. And whether it's dairy operations or other forms of agriculture, or people adding fertilizer to their lawns, if done in the right amounts, it would not create the problem. The problem comes from excessive use of fertilizer or improper management of the land, which contributes to runoff. And this is a national problem. We're talking about Wisconsin, but all over the country we have poor land use management practices and excessive fertilization of lawns. And now that we've controlled most of the point sources of pollution, as I indicated, the Clean Water Act really has been a remarkable success on point sources. But now we're looking at non-point sources, and that includes urban runoff from construction sites. But we're talking about agriculture and phosphorus as they affect water quality in the so-called dead zone.
Let's go, Dan in Green Bay. Hi, Dan.
Hi, this is Dan in Green Bay. I'm a former student of Professor Kraft and Professor Terry, and I'm wondering why there hasn't been research done to flocculate, which is a process to chemically attract the phosphorus in the manure containments of the farm, collect it there and make a big clump out of it, and then deal with the clump after you harvest it.
Is that type of research going on, do you know, Professor Kraft?
Well, Dan would probably know more about it than I would. I think, as Rick was indicating, there are many things that farmers can do to manage what is, after all, a valuable resource. As I said earlier, the problem, I think, is largely that the funds are not there. And this is why I'm a little concerned about the budget cuts and the Governor Walker's proposal for the next 2 years, which is the farmers do need technical assistance. They do need some financial incentives. And hopefully, over time, the right incentives are there to better manage the land. And that's that, to me, would be the optimal solution. The state land conservation experts and the DNR could work with farmers to find solutions, and as Dan indicates, there are solutions, and we need to get on with it. Otherwise, the problem is likely to worsen over time.
And one more call on this topic, and then we were going to switch gears and talk about recycling funds that are being cut out of the proposed state budget. Tom in New Holstein is with us. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Excuse me. I work for a large dairy that's a green tier certified through the Wisconsin DNR, which is an environmental management program excellence and standards. But we're not alone in large dairies having a very strict nutrient management plan, working with crop consultants, analyzing fields, applying manure to only the fields that can be used. So I think that The association that was made earlier about the existence of a large dairy farm somewhere and at the same time say non-point source just don't match up quite as logically as I'd like to see them match up.
Well, I don't get it, Tom. You don't think large dairy farms are a big part of this problem? Is that what you're saying?
Our large dairy is green tier certified. We work closely with the DNR to control the application of manure so that there is not runoff, probably more closely than smaller farms do, than golf courses do, and so on. So I thought that the tying together of large dairies as the reason for the dead zone was illogical and misleading.
Well, it was agriculture responsible for 46%, industry 23%, and municipalities 16%. But it sounds like larger dairy farms are disputing that they're a part of the problem, Professor Kraft.
Well, again, as I indicated, not every dairy farmer is responsible for contributing heavily to the situation. But the Journal Sentinel, which has done quite a bit of investigative reporting on, and I think this is the newspaper in the state that highlighted the dead zone, the reporters there pointed to all dairy farmers and other agriculture as the main source. That's the 46%. That's not to say that every, as I've indicated a couple of times, that not every farming operation is doing this. And I'm sure some of the larger dairy farms are well managed and are not contributing in this way, and others maybe less so. I know there's some concern over whether, and as I said, there is some state regulation of the large dairy farms, mm-hmm. and some concern over whether that regulation and the financial incentives and education and how to use best management practices are working as well as we would like.
Yeah. So I don't know how hopeful are you that that the phosphorus summit and educational efforts is going to address this problem?
Well, Representative Ribble says this is the summit that was held last week is the first of several he intends to hold. I know there was some criticism that it was a relatively small group that showed up at the meeting, about 150 people. Some said it wasn't very representative of the full spectrum of interest, including environmentalists and university and other natural scientists who can speak to the causes of the problem, as we've been talking about with several callers. So I hope Reed Ribble does continue to have these conversations with those who are interested in the problem. I hope the state DNR takes more interest. And the state is under some EPA orders, along with other states, to reduce contributions, particularly to the Mississippi River, but that's a separate issue from the Bay of Green Bay dead zone. And I think, more... I would definitely not like to see the legislature not reduce funding for the DNR so that it can act properly on the issue, and that is a concern as well. If the science staff of the DNR is being reduced, if the enforcement budget is not adequate, then I think it's hard to move ahead as quickly as we would like on some of these solutions.
Well, Governor Walker's proposed budget also includes a $4 million cut to recycling grants available to local governments. All four of the state's professional recycling organizations have come out strongly against those cuts. Talk some about why is the state reducing support for recycling?
Well, I think recycling initially was to be funded by the state to help start a recycling industry. So there have been state grants to local communities to facilitate starting up and continuing recycling programs. I think the assumption always was that over time the state support would not be necessary because recycling markets would develop and this would be something that would pay for itself. I don't think that's ever quite happened. We probably need more time for people to get used to recycling and for communities to promote their recycling programs. So in many ways, the governor's cuts are consistent with cuts elsewhere in the state operations where some fiscal situation requires some reduction in funding. In this particular one, the governor's proposed a significant cut in state spending for local recycling programs, and this will mean that local programs will either have to pull back from their efforts or find some additional source of funding, possibly from municipal and county budgets. So that to me is not a good thing because recycling efforts have been generally improving around the country. But you don't want inconsistency. You don't want to say one year people need to recycle and then curtail programs the next and then come back the following year. You really need to get people used to thinking about the need to recycle aluminum cans and metal, other metal and glass and paper. And we've made pretty good progress both in Wisconsin and around the country. So I think that's why you're hearing so much criticism of the cuts, because this is an effort that really has to be consistent over time to get people used to the idea.
We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will talk more about this proposed cut in recycling funds in the state budget. And we'll welcome your questions about this and your thoughts about this. Do you think that this is a step backward in recycling support? Do you think that the municipality should be able to fund these programs on their own now? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Do you think that this cut to recycling grants available to local governments is a big deal or not? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Do you recycle? Do you think your local government makes it easy for you to recycle? Do you support or oppose the proposed state budget that would cut recycling funds? The proposed budget would reduce recycling grants available to local governments by about $4 million. It would also eliminate funding for the UW Extension Solid and Hazardous Waste Education Center by about $400,000, and it would eliminate funding for UW Solid Waste Research and Experiments by more than $150,000. We are talking about these proposed cuts in the state budget, cuts that all four of the state's recycling organizations have come out strongly against. And we wonder what you think, what questions you have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. A listener on Facebook says, since I have been recycling, my other garbage has been so much less. But with this cut, I think Milwaukee says it will only collect recycling every 3 weeks. Maybe if there was an incentive to recycle, people would make more efforts to recycle. A couple of different things here, Professor Kraft. Are communities, is that the fear that communities may not collect recyclables as much or make it as easy for people to recycle?
Yes, that's the concern. I think we started off in many communities with a weekly collection. Here in Green Bay, it's now in Alloway, the community I live in, it's every 2 weeks. If it drops to every 3 weeks, I think people may forget they're supposed to recycle. State law says that recyclables cannot go into your regular trash that winds up in landfills. But the more the schedule is unpredictable, the less people may be willing to comply. So that becomes a concern.
Yeah. Dave on Facebook says, part of the tipping fee at landfills was supposed to help pay for recycling.
Right.
When are people going to realize that Walker and his counterparts in the legislature are continuing to reduce the shared revenue that local units are supposed to get from the state with no means of recovering these funds? Can you explain how the fees at landfills are supposed to be used?
Yes. Well, there's a tipping fee for putting anything into a landfill. It's $7 per ton, and governors from time to time have redirected those tipping fees, and as did Governor Walker. And so that is a part of the concern. And then there's the just simply reducing the state contribution to local programs, which may cause them to do less or to recycle less frequently. So that we could go to a tipping fee that goes directly to local governments or have a secure state fund based on the tipping fees that is removed from gubernatorial discretion, because other governors as well are tempted to use any source of money like that for other purposes. So I think a serious commitment to recycling means we have a dedicated fund, which this was supposed to be, and that municipalities can count on a steady flow of income so they can help educate citizens. And we call it, promote the programs, have periodic and predictable collection of recyclables. And eventually, as I said earlier, the market for recyclables would itself generate some funds to local and state governments, and that in turn may create a more permanent funding basis that allows us to go on with these kinds of programs.
Yeah, so what about the argument that these cuts aren't all that onerous and that local municipalities can just pick up the slack?
Well, some municipalities can pick up the slack just like some UW campuses can pick up the slack when their budgets are cut. But not every city will be able to do that. And I think the concern is those municipalities that on a thinner budget or where they have less discretion may not be able to. And then what happens is the local citizens are not going to get the kind of consistent positive message about the value of recycling. And we don't want this kind of up and down trend because many people already are not very motivated to recycle, and I think there needs to be a consistent message. This, after all, means we're keeping products out of landfills that have some economic value, just like the phosphorus we were talking about in the first part of the show. And I think aluminum cans can be easily recycled, paper products can be, and some of the local paper mills use only recycled paper. So we don't want to see that trend change and have people simply throw the recyclables into the regular trash.
Well, Amy on Facebook says, I see laziness about recycling almost everywhere I go.
Yeah, yes.
The garbage dumpster at the off-campus apartment where I work tells me the next generation doesn't care about the earth too much when they don't even bother walking 10 more steps to go to the recycling bin.
Yeah, I think that has long been true, and that's why I tried to emphasize the need for a consistent positive message to all citizens, whether it's on universities or in public schools and other buildings. People need to get used to the idea, and if they're not reminded of the importance of recycling and the value of conserving materials, then they may not be inclined to do it. So that's why I don't like to see these the up and down funding. Some municipalities may say, well, we're so committed to it, we're going to use the funds that we have for that purpose and we'll cut our budget somewhere else. But some communities are already operating on paper thin budgets, and they just don't have the discretion to move money back into recycling. So some smaller communities and even some larger ones may say, well, we're going to stop it, or we'll make it less frequent. But if it's not a predictable schedule, then people are going to be even less inclined to recycle, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, how important is it to recycle to our environment?
Well, the reason we started doing this some time ago, and some states have financial incentives. The state of Michigan has long had a 10 cents a bottle and has been one of the more successful programs in the country. It's about 98% of bottles recycled in Michigan. So you can try a financial incentive, but if we're just saying, as we do in Wisconsin, aluminum cans and bottles and paper are not to go into your trash, it's illegal, in fact, to do that. They are to be recycled. I think that's something that's very positive. We want to use our resources efficiently and wisely for the long term, and I hate to see us sort of move away from what has been a very successful recycling effort, and I'm afraid that would be the consequence in some communities of cutting the state financial contribution to communities to help them.
We have less than a minute to go. I know that you have been watching politics and the environment in Wisconsin for a long time. Your thoughts on how Wisconsin's environment in general fares under this state budget?
Not very well. Wisconsin, you know, when I first moved to the state 40 years ago, Wisconsin was one of the top five states in the country for its environmental record. Strong policy, strong state commitment, and we've certainly fallen since then. I don't think this is a change in public attitude so much. I think it's an easy program to target. The DNR is an easy program to target because it doesn't have a very positive public image. I think it's hard to get public support for funding scientific positions, hard maybe to get support for funding recycling, but I think the public of Wisconsin still very much wants to support these programs, but somehow that is not translating into the kind of political support during tough budgeting times.
And we'll have to leave it there for
that's
now.
That's what we're seeing this year. Okay.
Thank you so much for being
Thank
with
you.
Us.
Thank
Michael
you
Kraft, a professor emeritus of political science and public and environmental affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. I'm Joy Cardine.